I've entitled this morning's message, Taking Risks. There was a group of men at the local health club or gym when a cell phone that was sitting on the bench in the gym or in the locker room rang. And one of the men answered the phone and says, "Yes, hon, is that you? I can hardly hear you." She speaks louder, so now all the men in the locker room can hear. "Hello, are you at the gym?" "Yes," he says. She continues, "I'm in front of the fur shop, and they have this beautiful mink coat. Can I buy it?" He says, "How much is it?" "About $5,000. "Okay, you can buy it, but please buy the matching purse that goes with it, so it will be a nice look for you, my love." She paused for a moment and then said, "Well, it turns out that I also stopped by the car dealership today and saw that they have a brand new BMW on sale. It's the last one." "Well, how much is the sale?" "Only $60,000, she said. "Fine, buy it. But you have to get it with all the accessories. And if it costs a little more, I won't get mad." Well, the woman, realizing all her requests were being approved, decided to take a further risk. She said, "Honey, remember that I told you that my mother wants to come and live with us. Is it okay if I invite her over for a month just to try it out? And after a month, we can talk about it again." "Okay, fine. But don't ask me for anything else, please." "Yes, yes, I love you so much, baby," she said. "Love you too," he said. "Bye." As soon as he hangs up the cell phone, the man turns around and sees this group of men just staring at him with their mouths just hanging open. And then he asks, "Does anyone know whose cell phone this is?" It's really easy to be cavalier with resources that are not our own. Maybe I'm becoming too cynical, but I've noticed a trend in political announcements that's been going on for quite a while now that has to happen or happens every time they come out with a funding project or helping people out kind of project like the CERB. Quite often the politicians will gather to make their big announcement and say something like this: "We are pleased to be able to fund this project." And then they announce a big price ticket on that particular project. I think what gets me is that every politician speaks at these events as if the money is coming out of their own pockets. It doesn't. It actually comes out of our collective pocket. They are spending money that really isn't theirs. Therefore, it is a relatively easy thing for governments to just toss money around when it costs you nothing personally. For the rest of us, we are much more careful with opening our purses. Not always, but most of the time, and especially when it's a big ticket item, we count the cost. We should always ask, "Can I actually afford this purchase?" Not everyone is adept at doing due diligence when it comes to personal finance. This lack of diligence has led to what I consider one of the most unethical business models in our current culture. They're called payday loan companies. They advertise widely that they offer quick and easy loans just to help you get by till payday. What you never see in the ads is the outrageous interest and fees that you have to pay just to get a few $100 to tide you over till payday. And once many people find they're using their services, it's very hard to break free of the cycle, and as you have to keep borrowing money to pay the interest on the previous loan. We used to call that usury or loan sharking. So you and I, we know we have to be careful with money. It's therefore very interesting to me that the preacher in Ecclesiastes 11 lays out before us a very different approach. Yes, he says it is prudent to be careful, but it is also a wise thing to take risk. He is telling us that if we are always waiting for the right moment to use our resources, then that right moment may never come. Sometimes to achieve something, you have to act on faith. And frankly, that can be a very frightening aspect for us. I do, however, wonder if there is within us a natural need to, every once in a while, to step out of our comfort zone. We kind of crave the risk. I think that's why scams work. Ironically, when I was preparing this message, our home phone rang twice in 1 hour with a pre-recorded message that my Visa card had been compromised. Also, in the days preceding that, I've had duck cleaning calls, a scam about Revenue Canada, and somebody claiming that my computer had been compromised. The only reason I still get these calls is that scammers only need to catch a few unsuspecting folks to make it worthwhile. Those who try to trick us out of our money and personal information know that we are generally trusting individuals. If they make the cause or the issue plausible enough, you might just hook a fish. However, the more we hear about scams, the more cautious we become. But being cautious can also have a negative consequence. It can paralyze us into inaction. This is what the preacher is trying to address in today's chapter. At first read, the words the preacher uses in this chapter seem quite odd at first, but they actually make good sense when we begin to see what he's talking about in terms of risk and reward. He talks about casting our bread upon the water, and most of us have heard that verse used before. We use it as a way to express that we need to try something out. Let go a trial balloon, we like to say. There are a couple of ways, actually, to apply this particular verse. One seems quite obvious to us at first, and that is that you're never going to make a profit unless you invest. Taken literally, the verse seems odd because, well, if you throw water on the bread, it only gets soggy and it becomes inedible. However, in the preacher's day, this reference had to do with investment and trade. The bread in this case actually refers to seed that was sown to gain more. Harvest literally went out on the water by merchant ship, only to come back a few days later with the proceeds of the trade. In farming, if you do not cast your seed, you will not have a harvest. You have to take the risk to gain the reward. Set aside your resources in 7 or 8 ways, he says, to try and be prepared because you never know what's going to happen next. But never stop investing. If you wait for the ideal conditions to sow your seeds, like when there's no wind or rain, you may never get a chance. You know, when I used to farm, many folks used to talk about making hay when it's haying weather. In other words, if you want to have hay, you've got to cut and bale when the weather is right. You have to set everything else aside. Strike while the iron is hot is another idiom we have. You know that metal can only be shaped when it's hot out of the forge. The preacher is trying to tell us not to miss our windows of opportunity because, well, you never know. A tree lays where it falls, the wind blows where it wills. There's nothing you can do about these things, so don't obsess about them. Wisdom is to know what you can change and what you cannot change. Maybe you saw this coming, but do you all know the Serenity Prayer? The Serenity Prayer is a prayer that was written by the American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. It's commonly quoted this way: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Notice in Niebuhr's prayer, that the first thing he asks for is courage. And specifically for changing things that must be changed, not things that can simply be changed for the sake of change. Father, give us courage to change what must be altered, serenity to accept what cannot be helped, and insight to know the difference between one and the other. The serenity prayer is a good addition to examining the book of Ecclesiastes. In the vanity of life, what we are all craving is serenity. To be at peace with all the meaninglessness we observe that is around us. You know, the serenity prayer has been used by AA groups since 1942. But how many of you have heard the whole prayer in its entirety? This is what it says. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, taking as he did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Amen. Now, I mentioned to you at the beginning that there are actually two ways to look at this reference of casting your bread upon the water. In ancient Hebrew, the writers used to refer to the population of people as water. Therefore, the reference can also mean that it's wise for us to be generous with what we have. And putting our means in 7 or 8 different places, we should make sure that at least one of those places is to be generous with the people around us who have little or none at all. It would appear the preacher's point here is that if you receive, you will receive a return when you invest in those who are less fortunate. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that if you give money to someone or to an important cause, you're going to get something back. But maybe we receive something back that's more important. It's more precious than money. I found a series of heartwarming stories that the Reader's Digest had collected that speak to the reward of casting your bread upon the waters or acting with kindness and generosity to others. Leslie Wagner from Peel, Arkansas, tells of an experience of such a reward she received, a reward that was received by both the giver and also the receiver of a special gift. This is what she wrote. When the supermarket clerk tallied up my groceries, I was $12 over what I had on me. I began to remove items from the bags when another shopper handed me a $20 bill. "Please don't put yourself out," I told him. "Let me tell you a story," he said. "My mother is in hospital with cancer. I visit her every day and bring her flowers. I went this morning and she got mad at me for spending my money on more flowers. She demanded that I do something else with that money. So here, please accept this. It is my mother's flowers." That young man saw the power of his gift. But many times we don't see the good we do or the result of the good we do. If you cast your bread upon the water, you may never know what shall return to you. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." Jesus commands us to give in such a way that one hand is unaware of what the other hand is doing. Now, obviously, it's not to be taken literally. The context suggests that the injunction to not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing is referring to giving alms or donation in secret. It stands in contrast to those who like to give gifts by drawing attention to themselves. Those who give in order to receive accolades from others, according to Jesus, have already received their reward. God will reward those who give in secret. You know, Tim Sanders is a leadership coach and former chief solutions officer at Yahoo. And Saunders advises all his employees to reach out to their fellow workers and subordinates to show appreciation for their hard work. He often tells the story of how he did just that, speaking to his staff individually, giving them positive feedback on their performance, and telling them that he appreciated their efforts. Saunders recalls telling one specific man how glad he was that that man had come into his life and that they worked together. Now, after Sanders visited the man, he was shocked when the man returned a few days later and gave him an expensive gift. He gave him an Xbox console. As it turns out, the employee had purchased that Xbox by pawning a revolver that he intended to use to kill himself. After hearing the small words of praise from his boss, the man decided to keep living and seek help for his depression. Just a few kind words were all it took to get him out of his suicidal funk. Sometimes people just need people, Saunders says. And this is something the pandemic has shown us, hasn't it? Throughout our little series in Ecclesiastes, there's been an underlying theme that much of our contentment arises out of our view of life. If we can see the positive in even the darkest moments, we'll cultivate a grateful heart and find we are more at peace with our lives. Perspective is everything. And the sooner we accept this, the sooner we will know serenity. I found it interesting that the preacher mentions that young men, or I would include women as well here, should enjoy life while they can. It leads me to think our preacher is, as he writes this, an older man, perhaps in his final years, wanting to pass on to the next generation the lessons he has learned. In many seniors I have met, there is evidence of a coming to terms with the facts about aging and a humor arising out of the serenity of accepting one's time of life. One of my dearest friends in Toronto was a man by the name of Stan Treby. He was the last charter member of Donaway Baptist Church. He was at peace with getting older. He lived into his 90s and he loved life to the end. He was always passing on little humorous nuggets to me that expressed his peace with his age and his circumstance. He said, for example, that at his age, he never bought green bananas. He also told me one time that he loved being old. And when I asked him why, he said, no peer pressure. However, I've also known people much younger than Stanley who find life a drudgery. Yes, some of it's related to chronic health issues, but often it's just a matter of one's state of mind. I hope some of Stan's positive attitude to aging was rubbed off on me as I tack on the years. The final thing the preacher talks about in this chapter is perhaps one of the hardest lessons to learn. At least it is for me. The preacher talks about banishing anxiety from your mind and pain from your body. It reads at first as if the preacher thinks that if we want to be pain-free and anxiety-free, we just have to will ourselves to be so. However, translation in this verse means everything. The words banish anxiety is better rendered in Hebrew as therefore remove sorrow. Sensuality, disorderly lusts, which he eloquently calls sorrow, cause harm to intimacy that although such practices may gratify people's senses, they destroy our relationships. Yet they will shortly bring about intolerable sorrows, he says. Put away pain is better rendered, and put away all evil from your flesh. All evil desires, though they may seem good to us, especially in our youth, in reality, they are vanity. The time of youth is vanishing and transitory, and old age and death will speedily come, against which every person will take care to lay hold of solid provisions and comforts for the years ahead. It is therefore reckless to always keep in mind that when we are young, that it's only a temporary state. The energy, the desires of youth will fade in the inevitable aging process. Prepare yourself, the preacher says. Prepare for the time when your youth is no longer an advantage. It reminds me of the worry that many parents have over their teenage children, that they can do foolish things thinking they or believing they are invincible. Newsflash, none of us is invincible. And those of us who are older, we know this particularly well. We know it's true. Chapter 11 seems to be summed up nicely by saying that we need to understand that life moves from youth to old age, and we need to be prepared for this. Furthermore, we need to invest ourselves, our resources, in making the world and the lives of others better. And that seems to be the legacy of a very famous Canadian who just passed away a few days ago, namely one Walter Gretzky. Walter was never satisfied until he helped everyone he could. He opened his heart and his home to everyone. No wonder Wayne, his famous son, said of his dad, "He was the great one." You and I, we are called to be great in the service of God. I wonder, are we up to the challenge?